thing. I am sorry I don't have any announcement for you today.
Awareness pervades the whole universe, revealing this self right here, right now. Within this service, let us realize and unite with this infinitely compassionate universal life. Let us dedicate to Abraham, Siddhartha Gautama, Nagarjuna, Jesus, Patanjali, Lin Chi Ishwan, Muhammad, Mirabai, Hakun, Mohandas Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., Mother Teresa, and all of our teachers' minds, all matriarchs, all patriarchs. Our pure meditative mind, our truly awakened mind, our heartfelt mind, our truly compassionate mind, our pure discernment mind, our wisdom mind, past, present, future, all awakened minds. Let true Dharma continue. Let universal wisdom, compassion, and awakening become complete. Throughout the 10 directions and the 3 times, all awakened ones, venerable ones, compassionate ones, great ones, rely upon this incomparable transcendent wisdom. Come and let us worship here together. Please take just a moment to say hello or to introduce yourself to your neighbor.
Atadipa, you are this light, pure selfless awareness. Rely upon selfless awareness. Do not rely upon concepts of self and other that appear. Do not depend upon beliefs, sensations, and emotions which arise and fall away. Meditative awareness, clear intention, acting wisely, compassionately, and skillfully are this practice. Rely upon this only. Rely upon this ceaselessly.
Please rise in body or spirit for our first hymn, number 118, This Little Light of Mine. Welcome. Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. At LCUUC, we work to surround this community with a spirit of love in everything we do. My name is Marie-Claude McNulty, and I'm the worship associate for this morning's service. As a welcoming congregation, we hope that all visitors, friends, and members, wherever they are on life's journey, and whatever their backgrounds, will find a lasting home here. Please join us for refreshments and conversation in our social hall after the service. And while you're there, stop by the welcome table to find out more about LCUUC. Today's order of service includes no announcement of upcoming church activities. And we look forward to everyone joining in.
be a few announcements.
Like and follow Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church on Facebook in order to get ongoing information about activities, and check out our webpage at lcuuc.org to stay current on services and events. Please take a moment at this point in the service to silence all electronics you may have here with you today. And again, welcome to all here this morning. We are so pleased that you have chosen to celebrate and worship with us.
I will be gentle with myself, I will love myself. I am a child of the universe, being born each moment. I will be gentle with myself, I will love myself. I am a child of the universe, being born each moment. I will be gentle with myself, I will love myself. I am a child of the universe, being born each moment. I will be gentle with myself, I will love myself. I am a child of the universe, being born moment. I will be gentle with myself, I will love myself. I am a child of the universe, being born each moment. I will be gentle with myself, I will love myself. I am a child of the universe, being born each moment. I will be gentle with myself, I will love myself. I am a child of the universe, being born each moment. I will be gentle with myself, I will love myself. I am a child of the universe, being born each moment.
One of the ways that we care for our community is by contributing to local food pantries, both financially and through the collection of non-perishable food items each week, which we donate on a monthly basis. If you have food items to share, please either bring them forward yourself or ask a child to bring them forward. And I invite the children to stay up front and enjoy a story.
Okay. Well, good morning. Some of you may know that today is Bodhi Day. I know, sounds kind of strange. Doesn't anybody know what that is?
No.
Nope. I got one.
Joy Tari.
Today is the day that the Buddha reached enlightenment. Now that sounds pretty strange, and you may not know what that is. So let's talk about this. A long time ago, about 533 BCE, so about 500 years before Jesus was supposedly born, there was this guy, and his name was Siddhartha Gautama. And Sid was rich. he was seriously rich. What kind of stuff do you think you would have if you were unbelievably rich? Isabella, what would you have? Big, beautiful house. What would you have? Lots of money. Absolutely. What else? Pile of gold. An army under your control. What, Ruby?
Well, I think that's when, what you can have God to play to you every night.
All right. So he had all this stuff. And not only did he have it in one place, his dad bought him 3 palaces. One wasn't enough. So when he'd get tired of one, he'd go to the other one. And when he'd get tired of that, he'd go to the next one. Well, when he was 16, his dad said to him, well, it's time to get married. He wasn't too sure about this. But his dad brought him a very, very pretty young lady to marry. And he thought, what the heck? So he got married. And a year later, they had a little boy. But he still had everything he could ever want. What kind of food do you think he ate? Donuts, okay.
Jelly beans.
Jelly beans.
Well, I think that it should be very good to eat
everything. Everything? I bet he ate everything.
His favorite food.
So he had all kinds. What do you think? Yeah? He had everything you could ever want, just delivered to him on trays. But you know what? After a while, he got tired of it. And he didn't know what to do with himself. And it was kind of boring, even though he had a little baby to play with. And he started looking around, and he finally said, you know what? I've never been outside my palaces. So can you imagine having all that stuff but not being able to go out to go to the store? Or, yeah, because you don't need to. You never have to leave. Do you think that would get, even in the best house in the world, even an amusement park, don't you think doing it day in and day out after a while it would get kind of, you want to see something else? Yeah, that gets old. It gets boring. Well, he got bored. So he said to the guy who drove his war chariot, come on, let's break out of here. Let's go out and see what's going on outside. I'm going to be king, so I better know my people at least a little. I wouldn't even recognize my people. So they went outside and they drove around and he saw something and he stopped because he didn't know what it was. And he asked his charioteer buddy, he said, what's that? And the guy said, it's an old man. What's wrong with you? Haven't you ever seen an old man before? And Sid said, no. His dad had never let him see anybody getting old. So he looked, and he looked, and he'd never seen gray hair. He'd never seen somebody that was a little bent over. And he said, let's keep driving. Let's see what else is out there. Well, they went a little further, and there was a funeral going on because somebody had died. And he said, what's this? And his buddy said, you mean you didn't know people died? He said, no. What do you mean die? You mean I'm going to get old and die? Buddy said, yeah, of course you are. Everybody does. And he said, oh, my gosh. I didn't know. Why didn't anybody tell me?
It is weird.
His dad didn't let him know about any of this stuff because he was afraid to make him unhappy. So he grabbed his friend and he said, we're going to go out in the world and we're going to do better than this. So they went out and he spent 6 years wandering around, being a beggar. He put away all his rich things. And he would go place to place and he would beg for food. And it got so bad that he was living on 1 grain of rice a day. And I brought this in so you could see this. This is 2 days' meals. Can you imagine trying to live on one grain of rice a day?
No.
How long do you think that lasted? He passed out when he went to take a bath. Apparently, it isn't very smart to try to live on one grain of rice a day. So he decided maybe this wasn't a good idea. Maybe he needed to just sit down and think about this stuff. Think about how you live in the world where some people are so rich and other people aren't. So he sat down under a Bodhi tree, which today we would call it a ficus or a fig tree. You guys probably have seen them in stores. They have heart-shaped leaves. And he sat and he thought and he said, I'm going to figure this out. I'm going to think about it. It took him 45 days of sitting under that tree. But all of a sudden he got it. He said, you know what? I think I know how to live a middle way, a way where you're not starving yourself to death and you're not so rich that you don't even know how people live. And he was so excited, he sat down and he ate. He had a big, big bowl of bread and rice and milk. And he called his friends and he told them what he had learned. And they asked him, who are you? We don't even know you anymore. And he said, I am awake. I've woken up. Before I was just dreaming. And so we celebrate the day that he reached enlightenment or that he woke up. And in some Buddhist homes, it looks like Christmas almost. Most of you guys have seen a Christmas tree. Well, if you take one of those ficus trees and you put multicolored lights on it, you have a Bodhi tree. So it looks the same. They have the same type of celebrations with little gifts and little things hanging on the tree. And bright lights in honor of the Buddha, Siddhartha Gautama, Sid, and the day he woke up and reached enlightenment. So thank you all for listening to me today. And who is my lantern bearer? All right. And every day. If you all would please help me in singing the children to their classrooms. The song is called For You Shall Go Out in Joy, and the words are written in your order of service.
Monks decided to practice meditation together. They sat by the side of a lake and they closed their eyes in concentration. Suddenly, the first one stood up and said, "Ah, I have reached enlightenment." He stepped miraculously onto the water in front of him and walked across the lake to their hut on the other side. After a few minutes, the second monk stood up and said, "I too have reached enlightenment." He also calmly walked across the water to their hut. The third monk watched the first two carefully and decided this must be a test of his own abilities. "Is your learning so superior to mine? I can match any feat you two can perform," he declared loudly, and he rushed to the water's edge to walk across it and promptly fell into the deep water. Undeterred, he climbed out and tried again, only to sink deeper. Yet again he climbed out, and yet again he sank, and time again he tried. This went on for quite a while as the other two monks watched in silence. After the 15th or 20th attempt, the second monk turned to the first and said, "You know, you think we ought to just tell him where the stones are?" "I cannot tell you how to reach enlightenment, but for a small fee I will tell you where the rocks are." The morning offering will now be given and received. Our great thanks for these gifts given and received for the life and the work of our community. This is the time in our service where we share together as a community our joys and our concerns, and we do this in a few ways. Before the service, you are always welcome to light a candle at the side table silently. And at this point in the service, we speak aloud and we light a candle. Would anyone who has a joy or a concern to share, please raise your hand and the ushers will bring you a microphone. Please make sure you hold the microphone directly in front of your mouth and speak clearly.
Hi, my name is Erin, and at 3 o'clock Pacific time or 5 o'clock Central time, I will officially have been on this planet in the physical form for 60 years.
My name is Robin, and I want to say a thing about my sister who is dying right now, and she's a dear sister, but I've seen how she's wasting away, and I hope she is not having any more pain. So that's it.
My name is Jim. If you'd like to light a candle of joy for the wonderful turnout we had on Tuesday night to support the Family Promise homeless program that our church is a part of.
My name is Lynn. A candle for my nephew, Alex, a candle of concern who's struggling.
Hi, I'm Dan. Candle of joy that after 4 weeks at Children's, Isaac is finally home. And so this last couple of days have been really nice, the five of us at home together. Although that means some of us can't come to church because he kind of needs to just stay there. But hopefully that'll change and we'll get more used to his routine again and we'll be able to venture out some more.
Hi, I'm Chris. And my dad has had lots of health concerns over the years, and sometimes we would kind of joke that he's a cat and has 9 lives because we've had so many close calls with him. And this week, Tuesday, he suffered a stroke, and it seems like he's doing okay, but this is just another one of those, okay, is it going to be this time? There's all the things that go along with family and trying to organize future plans and that kind of stuff. And now Scott and I both have aging parents, and I'm sure a lot of us here know how that is, so you could light a candle of concern.
We light our last candle today for all of those joys and all of those concerns which we hold deeply but have not named here today.
There is a reality prior to heaven and earth. Indeed, it has no form, much less a name. Eyes fail to see it. It has no voice for ears to detect. You call it mind or Buddha, and to call it that violates its very nature, for it then becomes like a visionary flower in the air. It is not mind or Buddha, absolutely quiet, and yet illuminating in a mysterious way. It allows itself to be perceived only by the clear eye. It is Dharma, or teaching. Clearly, beyond form and sound, it is Tao, having nothing to do with words. So, wishing to entice the blind, the Buddha had playfully let words escape his golden mouth. Heaven and earth are ever since filled with entangling briars. All my good, worthy friends gathered here this morning, if you desire to listen to the thunderous voice of the Dharma, exhaust your words, empty your thoughts, for then you may come to recognize the one essence. Here ends the first reading. For the meditation this morning, we're going to do the Tara Dharani. There's a number of traditional versions and vehicles of this teaching, and one of them is Tara, and it comes from the Tibetan lineage. And the Tara is a divine manifestation, a feminine manifestation of this awakened consciousness. And in the Hindu tradition, there are, by some measure, 8 or 27 or several hundred Taras, each embodying some various aspect of awakened mind, wisdom, or divine qualities. One that is kind of at the top end of that pile is the green Tara, and she embodies enlightened wisdom, or insight, or understanding. And this Dharani, Om Tare Ture Swaha, is an invocation to the enlightened feminine wisdom to offer guidance and protection from all sorts of travails and difficulties. And sometimes they're listed in a long line, stampeding elephants, angry monkeys, hippopotamus in the river. I mean, they had a long list of all the things the green Tara was supposed to protect you from. I'm not sure about that, but it's a lovely chant, and we'll take this into silence with us. And I'll sing it through once, and then please join me, and then we'll slowly have this fade away into the morning stillness. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Swaha. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Swaha. Om Tare Tare Tu Re Swaha. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Swaha. Om Tare Tu Tare
When I, a bodhisattva of no rank, look through awakened eyes at the real form of the universe, all that appears is the never-ending, never-failing manifestation of the mysterious unfolding of truth. In any event, in any moment, in any place, none can be other than the marvelous revelation of the interplay of this glorious light. This realization has been the transformational moment, causing all of our masters and mentors, patriarchs and matriarchs, to experience true freedom and joy beyond comprehension, and then to extend tender care with a worshiping heart to all beings, beasts and birds, trees and flowers, even rocks and water. This realization teaches us, reveals to us that our daily food and drink, clothes and protections of life are the very warm flesh and blood, the merciful incarnation of this ever-present, living, divine mystery. Who then can be ungrateful or disrespectful, even to senseless things as well as to human beings? Even though some may appear to be fools or so-called enemies, we will remember to be warm, compassionate toward them. If by chance they should turn against us, abuse and persecute us, we will remember our fearless heart, our path of wisdom, compassion, nonviolence, and skillful means. Before we will react, we will consider deeply our personal and collective karma that brought these conditions and circumstances upon ourselves. Then, with each moment's arising flash of our normal feelings and thoughts, we will also recognize within us a field of pure awareness, wisdom, compassion, and skillful means. All of our minds will reveal a true awakened one, a Christ, a Buddha, a Tara, compassionately aware and ready, fearless and wise, acting skillfully and appropriately. Then all of our combined actions will create a new world, a world of love and caring, defended and ordered. May we awaken and recognize this mind throughout the whole universe, so that we and all beings together may experience maturity in awakened mind wisdom. Here ends the second reading. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing number 1031 in the teal hymnal, May I Be Filled.
So in your order of service, there is a small section called the Four Awakened Vows. And this version is taken from the Hollow Bones Rinzai Zen Sutra book, a collection of writings from the lineage to which I'm attached. And they are the vows that one takes when you commit yourself to becoming a serious student on this path. And you recommit and take those same vows again when you become ordained, which is a one-way street. There's no going back from that. And the vows look pretty impressive. They might take a week or two to actually accomplish. And the intention is that you set a bar for yourself that is so high, that is so wide, that in some ways is so immeasurable, that you're all in all the time. There's no halfway. There is no try. There's only do or do not. So join with me as we recite the Four Awakened Vows, which is sometimes also called the Bodhisattva Vows, the Vows of the Awakened One. However innumerable all beings are, I vow to serve and liberate them all. However deep and elusive my shadow states are, I vow to experience and enlighten them all. However vast and difficult true teachings are, I vow to embody and master them all. However endless my true path may be, I vow to awaken and follow forever. So Christmas is coming. Some people got American Girl dolls. I got this guy. This is a carving of a mythic figure named Bodhidharma. And he's kind of the Johnny Appleseed or the Paul Bunyan of Buddhism. There apparently was such a person, and there are historical records to document that. But exactly what Johnny Appleseed did, and exactly where Paul Bunyan went, and how big was his blue ox, and exactly what it was that Bodhidharma managed to pull off, is the subject of some speculation. There are many versions of what he's done, and the one that I'm most familiar with is the Buddhist lineage that started in India and migrated to China and then migrated to Japan and then migrated into the U.S. And everywhere that Buddhism landed, it kind of commingled and amalgamated itself with whatever the local traditional stories and ceremonies were. So there are these very different expressions of Buddhism in the world. It's the fifth largest, or one of the five largest religions on the planet. And as is the case with Christianity, there are a lot of different flavors of Buddhism. My flavor is the Hollow Bones order of the Rinzai tradition of Zen of Buddhism. None of that matters. What matters is there really was somebody named Bodhidharma, or unless you speak Chinese, in which case you'd call him Putitamo. And he appears to have been born either in the 5th or the 6th century. They do continuously talk about him as the red-haired barbarian or the blue-eyed barbarian. In any case, he didn't really look as though he was actually born of Indian lineage, which is darker skin and darker hair. So where did this clown come from? So another version is that he actually migrated into India from Turkey, which is an amazing cosmopolitan joining of cultures. Regardless, at some point, he bumped into Siddhartha Gautama and awakened and became a student. And eventually realized that what he needed to do was continue to travel even farther east, maybe having come from Turkey or Iran or Persia, again, depending on which stories you hear. And so by some means, he made his way into China. Either he walked barefoot all the way from India, or he took a boat around and stopped off in Vietnam and Laos and started amazing stories there. And the traditions from that area of the country claim him as their own. So do the Chinese. And so he landed in China. He landed in southern China and was kind of booted out. Southern China was the place of higher education and a little more enlightened culture. This was kind of the New York City of China, and they didn't like him. They sent him up north to where the rest of the barbarians lived. And he settled into a cave outside a Shaolin temple because he already had a bit of a reputation. And so he sat in this cave, and people started going to him. And he sat silently, the story goes, sat silently facing the wall of the cave for somewhere around 7 or maybe 9 years, depending again on what the story is you hear. And people from the temple started coming to him asking for teachings, and he refused to speak, and he refused to stop staring at the wall. He was a rather anal retentive, focused person. And so they started begging. Various stories say that Wei Kei begged him and demonstrated his sincerity to the point where he cut off his own arm and offered it as a gift to Bodhidharma. Please come out of the cave and teach us. He didn't say a word. Another story is that he died sitting upright and turned into a statue. Another story is that he sat so still and so quiet that his arms and legs atrophied and just dropped off, and there was nothing left of him but a torso. And so today, when you get Bodhidharma dolls in Japan, there are no legs on the dolls. Another story is that he fell asleep at year 5 and got so pissed because of all the work he'd put in and then fell asleep. Falling asleep, the metaphor for not being consciously awake anymore and functioning from a place of ignorance and delusion again. He was so angry with himself, he cut off his own eyelids and threw them out the entrance of the cave. And where they landed on the ground, magically, mysteriously, the first two tea plants sprung out of the ground. And that's why they drink tea in China, in Japan, today. So, for whatever reason, by whatever means, eventually he was coaxed out and he ended up becoming abbot at the local Shaolin temple. He was rather upset about the physical condition of the folks living there. They were kind of slouchy and sloppy. And so he started exercising them and created training regimes, which eventually became every martial art that's ever existed, which sprung from Bodhidharma's teachings. Supposedly Qigong. Supposedly Tai Chi, supposedly Kung Fu, lots of stories. He lived and taught for a very, very long time, managed to accumulate a few envious enemies who tried by various means to depose him from power. He was supposedly poisoned twice, and by sheer force of will refused to die. And the third time he was poisoned, he took such pity on the person that poisoned him that he willingly chose to allow the poison to work. And he had also gotten to 150 years old and decided it was time to do something else. There are lots of stories. And at some point, he did die. At some point, they buried him. And shortly after that, there was a government official walking from one city to another. It was a rather organizational, administratively kind of focused place. So these administrators were in charge of everything, including checking papers and stuff as you're walking along the road. This official met this crazy man walking down the road, wild-eyed, no eyelids, crazy red hair, and recognized him and asked him, "Where are you going?" And Bodhidharma says, "I'm going home. But don't tell anyone or bad things are going to happen to you." The government official then asked him, "But you're walking without your shoes, and you're only wearing one shoe. Why?" He said, "Go back to the Shaolin temple, and you'll know." And so the official went back to the temple and met with Emperor Wu there. He said, "I have important news to tell you. I've met Bodhidharma." And the emperor said, "That's not possible. He died just a few days ago. We finished the burial ceremony. The mound is still fresh right there." He said, "No, it's not possible. I met him on the road. I spoke with him. He told me to come here." And when they dug up his grave to see, well, what was the real story, can you guess what they found in the grave? That is where the other shoe was. You don't know what's true. You can make up your own mind.
Bodhidharma and the Buddha. Wow, all these incredible stories. You know what? Today I am going to find enlightenment. Yep, I am going to do it today. Let's just make sure I've got everything. Meditation cushion, 105-23 at SkyMall. Check. Yoga pants, Lululemon, $74.98, used. Still good. I got them. Check. Fair trade all cotton meditation shirt, $17. One Bodhi tree, handmade, in handmade pot, $187 with shipping. I got robbed. Check. I'm ready. I've got a ring gong, and I'm not sure what I'm going to do with it. Maybe I should just ring it when I'm enlightened to let people know. The hell with it. I'll put it over here. And I've got relaxing meditation music. Yeah, 100 hours of sacred Tibetan chants with birdsong. Boy, I hope I don't have to play it through twice. Here we go. Clearing my mind. I'm clearing my mind. Boy, those chants are annoying. Those don't sound like real birds. All right, the heck with it there. Turn that off. That's better. Sure is quiet in here. Maybe I should chant, like a mantra or something. Crap, I don't remember that one Eric taught. Okay, let's go simple. Let's go with Om. 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 This sounds dumb. I bet I look dumb. I wonder what I look like. Where's my phone? No, no phone. All right. Let's try again. I'm going to count, just mindless repetition. Take me out of my physical self. 1, 2, 3, 4. Hey, Macarena. No, this isn't working. Clear my mind. My leg itches. Is that the phone? Maybe I should put the chance back on. I think a leaf just fell on my head. Was I snoring? I think I was snoring. I think I know why Bodhidharma cut his own eyelids off. Let me try again. Was I snoring? Am I asleep or am I awake? Am I asleep or am I awake? That was the question Siddhartha asked himself somewhere around 533 BC. Siddhartha was born in southern Nepal. And he wasn't just born a little rich. He had wealth beyond what we can imagine today. This young man was Bill Gates and Paris Hilton wealthy, removed from reality wealthy. His mother died about a week after he was born, and his father and his mother's younger sister raised him, and he was spoiled beyond human imagining today. He did have three palaces. His father married him to a beautiful young woman at 16. He had a son. But he knew something wasn't right. It wasn't real. He just didn't know why or how or what the not real peace was. And as far as the stories we have, he really was 29 before he got outside the walls of his own palace. That's frightening. That wealthy and that controlled, that contained. But he knew he had to meet the people that his father expected him to rule. And he was a kind man. He wanted to know, who are these people? And one of the first things he saw when he got outside his own walls was an elderly man. Can you imagine having to ask the guy driving your war chariot? He really did ask his friend, who was his charioteer and driver, what is that? Why does that person look that way? He knew it was a person. He just didn't understand what the gray hair, what the wrinkles. His charioteer kindly explained to him what he was looking at and told him, you'll get old too. And this was news. It took him a few days to recover from the shock, but when he got out again, he saw someone with disease, and again, somebody had to tell him what he was seeing. In all his life, nobody had been allowed near him that could give him something. And he got out a little further and actually saw a body that had been thrown in the ditch and stood there crying because he had no idea that that was what happened to humans. And once he got it, really got it, that that is what happened. Nobody lives young and beautiful forever. He went into a deep depression. And he didn't know how to get out of it until he saw a beggar wandering by who was starving. And he thought, wow, maybe this is it. Maybe go from one extreme to the other. And this really sounds removed from reality today until you look. From 2003 to 2007, the real Paris Hilton, heir to the Hilton fortune, and Lionel Richie, the musician, his daughter, Nicole, had a reality TV show called The Simple Life. The original premise of the show, as it was designed, as it was pitched, was that these two extraordinarily wealthy young women would try each week to do simple jobs, things that most of us in this room take for granted. And they would work at a dairy farm, at a drive-through, at a hotel, at a summer camp. And that we would get to see them learn these skills that we all take for granted. And it would be great television watching them learn how to make soft serve cones. Unfortunately, week after week, they proved totally unable to function in their new surroundings. The knowledge gap was so large. They actually had to change the premise and direction of the show. They didn't have the simplest survival skills. They didn't have the simplest knowledge about how to interact in a real world, in the world outside the walls. And they did actual damage. The first place that they placed these young women was at a real dairy farm run by real family who had owned it for generations. They did thousands of dollars worth of damage. They did thousands of dollars worth of damage, unscripted, unplanned for damage. This is not good TV damage. This is, they broke stuff. They did so much damage at the Jack in the Box restaurant where they worked. They actually took the manager's personal credit card and went off on a spending spree. No comprehension, no ability. And the series had to change direction because they couldn't learn to function. When they were shown that they lived in a dream, they turned over and went back to sleep. And by the final season, that show had them in L.A. with their phones and their own credit cards because they just couldn't do it. On a daily basis, I see and hear things that challenge my own dream. Racial tension, protest, poverty, things that make me shift uneasily on my meditation cushion, look up from my gong and realize that I live in a walled garden, just as protected as Siddhartha's. But he didn't stay there. When he saw that beggar, something started to wake up inside of him. He left his wife, he left his son. According to the stories, his wife could not understand why he needed to stop his charmed life. He gathered up that friend who had explained age and death to him, and he set out as a beggar himself. And he moved from place to place with new teachers. And each time he did so well, they invited him to succeed the teacher that he worked with. But he turned them down. He gathered together five companions as he traveled. And they all became convinced they weren't depriving themselves enough. They starved themselves more and more. At one point, he really did get into a stream to bathe and nearly drowned because he was so weak. That resonated for me. When I was young and I wanted to lose weight, I would refuse everything, all sweets, all alcohol, most food. I would eat lettuce and half sandwiches, and this would last for about 4 days before you give up and eat the refrigerator. A friend of mine has a problem with shopping. She would spend money she didn't have, buy things she didn't need. A few times I thought her husband was going to kill her. And each time she would swear she would do better. And for a few weeks she would just refuse to buy anything. Oh, no, 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 I don't need that. No, I don't need that. Regardless of if she needed it or not. And there would be this huge list of things that would pile up that she had to get. And eventually she would have to go spend $200 or $300. And because she had to spend so much, she'd throw in the towel and say, what the heck, what's another $200 on top of that? And it would all start over. Siddhartha came to realize that that total deprivation doesn't help. In fact, it was keeping him from enlightenment because it forced him to focus even more on himself than he had before. If you have to survive on one grain of rice every day, your entire day becomes spent on not passing out, not on enlightenment. When he finally sat down, the girl who saw him starving there actually thought he was not human, thought he was something from the spirit world. She brought him milk and rice, and he ate, and he sat down under the bow tree. And his friends left. Oh, you ate. That's it. You broke it. You ruined it. They went off to continue starving. And he sat for 49 days, and then someone asked him, who are you? And he said, I am awake. He had become the Buddha. He had realized the cause of suffering in the world and the steps needed to end it, and there were four pieces that became known as the Four Noble Truths. Everything is suffering. Even good things are suffering because they will end. To really understand this, he said, you have to understand yourself because you too are temporary. All suffering comes from wanting something outside of yourself. Because you don't understand yourself. You always want something else. You're thirsty for something to be added. If you can stop wanting more than yourself, you can end your suffering. And there is a path that you can take to help learn to stop wanting and begin to live mindfully. And I've heard people compare this to the idea of salvation, where God saves you from evil. But it's not really analogous. Salvation is the idea of being accepted as good enough by God, being welcomed into the company and presence of the divine. This is the goal of Christianity. A closer concept would be the idea of epiphany, sudden illuminating discovery. Enlightenment is to become awake, to have that moment of blinding clarity that lights up the darkness of your path. Bodhi Day is the day where we celebrate these little moments of illumination. The multicolored decorated lights on the tree, the ornaments in threes to remind us of the Buddha, the world, and our community. Accept your own moments of enlightenment and celebrate them. They don't always come from 49 days on a cushion with chanting and birdsong and yoga pants. They come in explosive flashes where everything aligns just right for you. At one point, Buddha held a flower in his hand, and without speaking, one of his disciples was instantly enlightened. Something clicked. It is the very ordinariness of these moments that lead to enlightenment. They're like those optical illusions, where when you see, oh, look, this way it's a horse's head, this way it's a woman. Or the magic eye where suddenly the picture comes clear. You can't ever unsee it again. Go sit down under a tree or go skiing down a hill. Listen to the chants or to Iggy Azalea or to Peter, Paul, and Mary. It doesn't matter. Listen to Marilyn Manson or AC/DC. Wear your yoga pants or wear them on your head. Doesn't matter. Take the middle road of common sense. Trust yourself. Welcome the answers when they come. You are enough. Be prepared to open your eyes and answer the question, who am I? I am awake. Amen.
Never doubt the imperturbability of your true, pure awareness. Never doubt the invincible compassion of your true, pure heart. And carry this light of awareness into the world. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing hymn number 131, Love Will Guide Us.
Thank you.
Siddhartha Gautama said, "Thus shall you think of all this fleeting world, a star at dawn, a dewdrop in the morning sun, a bubble in the mountain stream, a flash of lightning in a summer cloud, a flickering lamp, a shadow, a phantom, a dream. And thus they are to be regarded." When the Buddha finished this discourse, all attending were filled with the joy of his teaching, and taking it sincerely to heart, they went their separate ways. Peace, and may it be so.